Donna Kerridge is Nuku 39. She is a tohunga of Rongoā Māori, although she doesn't describe herself as that. The humble practitioner, tutor and advocate is passionate about Indigenous practices that focus on healing and restoring our people and our whenua. Rongoā is a practice she learnt from childhood, growing up in a whānau that would seek their medicine from the bush and from each other. In this episode, we talk about orangatanga and all that that entails. We discuss the Tohunga Suppression Act and today's laws that still limit our traditional practices. Donna shares some of her tips for wellness and tells us the tale of how her second form school teacher, Mrs. Kingi, changed her life. Whakarongo mai. Kia ora, I'm Kiane. Nuku is a movement. We're empowering Indigenous wahine to be agents of change, cultivating opportunities to shape the world we want. Through this series, we're meeting 100 kick-ass Indigenous wahine doing things differently. They show us how the world can be shaped by our unique Indigenous voice. It's all about who we are and not who we've been told to be. Nuku, mahine, mohine, kiahine. Morena, Donna Kerridge. Morena.
Morena.
How are you today?
I'm great. Million dollars.
Welcome to the Nuku Whare, Whare number two. I am really excited to have you in the Tūru today because I have followed your rongoā career for many years in the background and have seen some of the amazing mahi that you've done and written about and been a part of, and so I'm a little bit excited. I'm fangirling a little bit having you here. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Kia ora. I'm ko Taupiri te Maunga, ko Waikato te Awa, ko Tainui te Waka, ko Ngāti Maniapoto, ko Ngāti Tahinga, ko Ngāti Mahuta, Oku Hapu, ko Weraroa te Marae, ko Donna Kerridge tōku ingoa. Kia ora. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure where to start.
Where did you spend your childhood? Where were you brought up?
So I was born in Tokoroa and lived with my maternal aunt. I was whangai to my maternal aunt when I was from birth and lived there for a while, then moved to the Manawatū with my birth family and then did my college years in Tamaki. Mm. So, and then I married a serviceman and we moved around the country, seven different towns in the first 7 years. That doesn't happen anymore in the military, thank goodness. And now we've settled in Oakura in the north on the Whangaruru Harbour. We have two children and 9 moko, all of whom live in Tamaki.
Oh boy.
So we're here a lot. And then, of course, I travel around the country and there are a lot of spots very, very dear to my heart. I think everywhere I go, I want to be adopted by the local iwi. Some places I've succeeded, some not so. But we also have a really soft spot for the Chatham Islands. Even though we don't whakapapa there, it very much feels like home to us. So,
what is it about the Chatham Islands that feels like home?
The people. Mm. The sincerity, the generosity, I don't know, they're just real grassroots people that don't have time for rubbish.
Mm.
And I just love being in their company.
You were saying you're whangai to your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Did you grow up with siblings around you?
So when I was living with my aunt, I was the youngest of 10.
Wow.
So I can, and who whangai is another one, and there were more after me. But I'm guessing I was pretty much a spoilt little brat during that time, and my siblings from that whānau are still very much part of my life today. We don't see each other a whole lot. We've all got older and grandparents in our own right now. But when it matters, we're all there, and that's awesome. And then I went back to my birth family and became the eldest of 5, and we're all still alive, so that's wonderful. And we have two that live in Australia. One lives in Dunedin, one lives in the Hawke's Bay, and me.
What was it about your childhood that led you to pursuing knowledge around rongoā Māori?
Oh, that's a good question. When I was young, I never even knew there was a word, rongoā. Yet what I've come to learn later on, a lot of what we did was rongoā.
Mm.
But it wasn't given its own term. I can remember as a child having a jar of kumaraho in the fridge, and if we coughed, we had to drink it. And it's not like we make it today. It still had all its plant matter in it. I'm sure it had been there for the whole year because, you know, we only got our kumaraho once a year from the north.
Mm.
And I'd run to the back of the section to cough so I didn't have to have the kumaraho. So I reckon it worked. But, and also a real turning point for me was when my aunt was unwell and nearing her final days, you know, we all took turns with her over the months that led up to her passing. And she used to say things to me like, just rub my feet, dear. Can you just rub my legs? And I would do that, and it would bring her huge comfort, even though I didn't know what I was doing. And I would do it all day, right from the time I got there to hours and hours and hours, and never get tired. And she would feel better for it. And I would just work away quietly while she talked to people, you know, when they get to the end of their time. They've got a whole lot of business they want to take care of in the time they have left. So there's lots of intimate discussions with people. And she didn't want me to leave the room, so I stayed through all of those, just, you know, doing miri miri on her or holding her hand. And something inside me just clicked. And I knew it was making a huge difference, even though I didn't really understand it. And, you know, we've been told that when she was a young child, she was the person they came to get to come and talk to the patupaiarehe. And then, you know, life in the universe moves on and Christianity creeps in, and you know, our family was very much a Christian family. And so those things got put to the side and we never heard of them as we were growing up. And it wasn't till it came close to her time that these stories started to come to the fore again. And then my mother, my birth mother, tells us about how our grandmother was a midwife. And so the wahine in our family were, you know, healers in their own way. So I was getting to a time in my professional career where, you know, chasing the almighty dollar or the title or whatever it is we do when we go to work, when it's for more than just work. And I was coming to the end of my use-by date, and I could see that the same things that had drawn me into that weren't as exciting as they once were, and it was time for a change.
Mm.
So having lots of opportunity at that time, I was able to travel the world and learn about different Indigenous cultures and how they healed in my downtime. I have an extremely supportive partner who was like, you know, what tangent are you off on now? So I was able to do all of that. And then I decided to formalise my study. And, you know, I thought a tohu was the thing, my old thinking.
As you do sometimes.
Yep. And so I went away and I studied health science for a while. Oh, I finished it. But I realised towards the end and in the very last parts of that study that while science has certainly moved us forward a whole lot in a lot of ways, it's certainly not complete.
Mm.
And I remember sitting in class one day and we had a exercise to do and we were given a case study about a particular scenario for a wahine with, you know, 3-4 children at home, still feeding a baby, all of these things wrong, and we had to work out a treatment plan. And I, like everybody else in the class, had written a treatment plan, And then we had to stand up and present it. And I listened to everybody else, and we all had similar treatment plans, so many milligrams of this and that and whatnot. And I thought, when they asked me, I just went, actually, you know something? Given that I've already had children and I know what that's like, despite all my training, I'd get her a babysitter.
Mm.
And then I knew something was missing from the way we were teaching our graduates. And I went straight back to Rongoā. I just knew that that's where the gold was for me. It's not to put down the advances of modern medicine, because I know our tūpuna would be grateful for it. I absolutely know they'd be grateful for it. And there aren't many of us on this planet who wouldn't be grateful at some point in our lives, whether that be for our children or our parents or ourselves, for the advances of modern medicine. But Rongoā is just so much more. And I'm really, really grateful for the legacy of our tūpuna and for the opportunity that people have given me to be able to share that, the people who have invested their time in teaching me. One of my aunts said to me when I said to her that I was doing Rongoā, she said, oh my goodness. She said, what are you doing that for? Why don't you go be a real doctor?
Mm.
And that took a wee while to get over that. But I realised that she grew up in a time when it wasn't cool to be Māori.
Yeah.
And so I understood that. And luckily for me, being Māori is really cool these days. So it works for me.
Wow. And so from your whakaaro, how would you describe Rongoā? What is Rongoā? Because I think for a lot of us we go, oh, Rongoā is this medicine in the bush.
Aye.
But from your whakaaro, what is Rongoā? What does it encompass?
I guess the objective for Rongoā for me is to lift the Māori in people and planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not restricted to the human species. It's not, Māori don't have the monopoly on healing. For me, I've always been taught that as a Rongoā practitioner, our first patient is always the whenua. If the whenua, if Papa isn't well, then we can't be well. Mm. She's what provides our clean air, our fresh water, our kai. And if we don't take the time to care for our mother, for Mother Earth or Papa Tuanuku, then despite what we do, we can't be well. And so moving that to the forefront is very much part of my practice. And I've also learnt that when we look and care for Papa, we learn a whole lot of stuff without even trying to. So when we know how to care for the wetlands, how do we restore the wetlands, the rules that we apply in order to restore the health of those places is exactly the same as the principles for caring for our kidneys. And it's our wetlands that are the kidneys of the whenua.
Mm.
And when we look at the plants that their gift is to restore the whenua when she's been scorched, so she heals the whenua, or these plants heal the whenua when she's been burnt, they're exactly the same plants that we use to heal us, kumarahau being the example. If we're burnt, if we have the effects of inhaling smoke on our lungs, those are the same gifts for people to heal. And so that's just the plant side of things. But you also learn, whether it be through taongapuoro, whether it be through plants, whether it be through tangaroa, any aspect of te taiao, there are Rongoā lessons there, no matter which way you turn, whether that's navigating the stars, whether that's whakaeroa, all of that, the kōrero from what I've learnt about other practices is identical. It's exactly the same. That notion of respect, that notion of connectedness, that notion of for every action there's a reaction.
Mm.
And so we need to be mindful of how we walk on this earth and the things that we put out there and how that impacts everything else, which in turn impacts us. I guess some cultures call that karma.
Mm.
For me, I'm kind of a little more basic, and now that I know what I know, it just seems like common sense. So, For me, rongoā is about lifting Māori, but not just in people. And when we look at the plant world, for example, you know, a kauri doesn't grow strong by itself. A kauri needs a community in order to be well.
Mm.
And that's why they don't live in isolation. That's why people are meant to live in community, because we don't all have the same gifts, but we all need the same things.
Mm.
And so we get well as part of our involvement, our contribution to our communities is what helps keep us well. And for me, modern living, if you were to ask me what are the most common causes for people to be unwell, I think I could just about put them in four or five categories. One of those being lonely. A lot of our people, Māori and non-Māori, they can live in apartment buildings now and not know their next door neighbours.
Mm.
Sometimes, you know, we might have an indiscretion and we don't know how to fix it, so we withdraw instead of trying to fix it. I mean, when I was growing up, I would have got a slap around the ears and got told to go fix it.
Mm.
But now it's, you can just withdraw. It's the path of least resistance. But actually, you know, we internalise all of that and that makes us unwell. And when we're lonely, we eat different foods, we exercise differently, and so then that starts to manifest physically, where we can see that in people. So lonely is the big thing. And, you know, we spend a lot of times trying to be exclusive rather than inclusive. You know, there's a whole thing about, you know, this is exclusively yours, exclusively for you. Really, that's not the Māori way. And I would also assume that it's not the way of most Indigenous people.
Mm.
You know, Indigenous peoples are part parcel of the whenua, and for Māori, we're called tangata whenua because, you know, we're the people that have lived on this land the longest. Hopefully we understand it intimately, and hopefully we have the courage to share what our ancestors left us for the benefit of everybody who lives here now.
In thinking about our ancestors, in Aotearoa we had the Tohunga Suppression Act, which prevented our ancestors, or I don't know whether it actually prevented, but it made a law that stopped our tupuna from being able to practice some of these things, including using rongoā. However, today, you are a practitioner of rongoā, you are an advocate for rongoā, you are a tutor, a kaiako around rongoā. How have things changed?
Well, up until this month, not a whole lot.
Mm.
So the Medicines Act actually makes it illegal for me to refer to any of what I do as Māori medicine.
Wow.
So we're not to use the word medicine. We're not to say on any of our websites or on our labels or on any material that that it heals anything that can be diagnosed. So, you know, if we have something that's really good for piles, we're not allowed to say that this has been traditionally used for the treatment of hemorrhoids. We're not allowed to say traditionally used for diagnosable conditions. I may say for anal discomfort, but I may not say hemorrhoids. I may not say this is really good for eczema, but I may say can be useful for dry, flaky skin. So the Medicines Act has a lot in common with the Tohunga Suppression Act. They're currently in the process, and aroha mai for stepping into political ground here.
But okay, te poi.
never miss an opportunity. So currently they're reviewing the Medicines Act, which everybody agrees is time for an overhaul.
Mm.
However, the review that I've seen thus far failed to consult with Māori, failed to check that some of the things that they're proposing in there to even appreciate that they impact on the practice of rongoā Māori.
Mm.
So for any for any tools of the trade, basically, when we're going under the Therapeutic Products Bill is going to be the replacement name for the Medicines Act. Any of the devices that we use need approval. However, the word that the ministry staff mentioned to me maybe 2 years ago now is, but of course that doesn't affect Rongoā Māori because you don't use devices. So I very tactfully tried to explain that the example you use in the paperwork that supports the changes, you talk about tongue depressors being tools that need different levels of approval. What happens to the kohatu that we use in mirimiri? Is that going to be considered a device, a medical device? The rākau that we use, the shells that we use, there's a lot of tools that we use in the practice of Rongoā Māori that the ministry were not even aware of and made the assumption that that would have no impact on Rongoā Māori, just like they did in the Medicines Act. And I tell you what, after 50 years, I'm really saddened that we've not learnt anything. However, having said that, last month, ACC have approved Rongoā Māori as a treatment for their clients.
Wow, that's
amazing. So that's a huge start. We've got a lot of work to do to ensure that the quality of that service is right.
Mm.
We've also got a lot of work to do around no one's the boss of Rongoā Māori, not me, not anybody else. And as I said to one of our hui up north, where we had a lot of medical specialists, is, you know, no one else gets to be the boss of Rongoā Māori. The Ministry of Health doesn't get to be the boss of Rongoā Māori. They don't even know what it is. How can they assume to be the boss of it and tell us how we must practice our mahi? And me as Māori, I don't get to tell any other Māori how to practice Rongoā Māori. It is not my place. We all do it differently, and I hope that we all do it to the best of our ability. And I hope that we still have the kaumātua kuia to slap us round the ears when we step out of line. Because when I look back to how our tupuna managed the safety of people who used the services of Rongoā Māori, you soon knew if you weren't up to speed. They kept us in line. Or they'd just say, ugh, that one's a hoha, don't go there, you know, and you soon went out of business. So that's, you know.
Bad reviews.
Yeah, bad reviews. That's a good one.
I guess in talking about bad reviews and playing a little bit of the devil's advocate here, what are some of the dangerous things about rongoā? And I guess it's not so much the rongoā itself, but it's those who maybe have an interest in Rongoā Māori but don't quite have the mātauranga to use it well. And there are people out there that do that.
Yeah, the dangers for Rongoā Māori are no different to the dangers of driving a car when you haven't been taught properly. So it is about making sure that you learn from the right people, that you don't let ego get in the way. That's probably the biggest danger I see when we start to think that we're the healers and then it becomes about protecting ourselves rather than protecting the taonga that rongoā is. Those things get in the way of us being or achieving our potential. So, and it's, I guess, not a case of, you know, we don't whakaiti other practitioners, but we can afi them. We can show them other ways. And they can choose whether or not they follow it. And I guess karma, our tupuna, whoever, if you don't take those opportunities, you don't use them to build upon, to improve, to afi your own whānau, then before long you got a new job. So I have to rely on that.
In thinking of it as a job, I suppose, there has been debate in the past about whether or not Rongoā Māori should be monetized in the sense of people selling balms or selling tinctures or selling their products. And there are two camps.
Yep.
There's the how dare you sell this, and then there's the, well, you made it and you should probably get, you know, compensated for that. What's your whakaaro around that?
So I've had those challenges myself. I remember a queer came up at a hui we were at, and we'd been invited. Tainui, Waikato Tainui had invited us to go along and support one of our events and to look after our kaumātua queer and to make rongoarākau pani and cream available to people who were attending the hui and to sell it if we wanted to. And I remember a queer coming up and having a good old go at me, and I can remember saying to her really clearly, that was after my uncle had a few words in my absence that I didn't know about, but I remember saying to her quite clearly, look, I'm really sorry, Fire. I didn't mean to offend you. If you would like, I'm happy to pack this all up and put it away. I was invited to do this. I was asked to bring this. But if it causes offence, I'm very happy to pack it up. She said, no, that's not what I asked you to do. You should be giving this to us, not selling it to us. So I learnt a valuable lesson that day, and I learnt that actually, no, I get to call who I give it to, not everybody else. And so I remember at the time thinking, you know, that particular year, because it had worried me, I went away and did some serious thinking. And I looked at it, and I had spent over $18,000 that year on raw materials because I do everything above board. And I had taken $6,000 in takings. So then I realised that actually, no, I reserve the right for who I give it to and who I share it to. And that also gives me the choice to sell it to enable me to be able to give to others. So I'm okay with that. I feel really comfortable with that. And what other people do is their business.
Yes. That is, it's your business and it's their business.
Aye.
And maybe if you're nice to people who make rongoā, they might want to gift some to you.
Exactly.
As part of your teaching and as part of your workshops, you go around the mutu and you run classes about rongoā. Do you have, is it a class that has a tohu, or is it sort of an introductory course? Tell me a little bit about the teaching that you do.
So is there a tohu? No, other than you can say you trained with so-and-so for however many hours, and that might get you somewhere in some places, and it might get you the door shown to you in others. So, yeah. And really what we share at our wānanga is subject to the group. So we'll go to some places where we need to explain a lot of the kupu. Other places, we'll teach things that we wouldn't normally teach in a public forum. It's about gauging what the group need. So I certainly don't have all the answers, and there's a lot of rongoā that is yet to be shared with me. There are some very sensitive areas in healing, some of which I think I know about and some of which I'm sure I know nothing about. If I need to know those things, my teachers will come. And they will come at the right time. But quite often I'll have people ring me and go, oh, excuse me, Fire, do you know anything about this? And the famous one is always the mushrooms. Do you know anything about this? Why do you want to know? Oh, because I can't find any literature on it, and I was just wondering if you could help us out. You know, and I go, there's a really good reason why there's no literature on it. And actually, not my place to share, and I wouldn't know half of that stuff. So, you know, best you go learn about rongoā first, and then maybe you'll understand the answer to your question later on. But, you know, I'm sure people who start out in medical school don't get taught how to do open heart surgery in the first year.
Yeah.
And there'd be a very good reason for that. So I don't think rongoā Māori is too different.
There are so many people who are eager for the mātauranga around rongoā.
Aye.
excuse me. Last year we had a Nuku Live Wahine Wānanga, and the Rongoā workshop was the one that was subscribed to first, fully subscribed to first. And I think there's this, along with the resurgence of te reo Māori, of Matariki, Maramataka, Rongoā, everybody is very eager to return to lots of our traditional practices and our Indigenous knowledge. And I know that there are some basics of Rongoā that can be quite easily accessible to people. And I immediately just go to kawakawa. People can identify kawakawa quite easily. They have a better understanding of all of the, you know, the plants and the taiao that they might be able to use for Rongoā. They probably have a better understanding of what kawakawa is. Are you able to share a couple of practical tips for people who are just probably not wanting to become Rongoā practitioners, but are wanting to explore some easy Rongoā for their household to feel that they're reconnecting to this mātauranga and also probably helping themselves at the same time?
Wow, there's heaps. There's heaps because our people were so practical and they weren't fussy. So things are really easy to access. And then there's, you know, there's a couple of levels to wanting to know about Rongoā. I know that when I first went and learnt, I thought it was all about the pane. Even though I'd grown up in a household where karakia was really important, where miri-miri was, everybody had left the room when my uncle came home because he'd want miri-miri for 2 or 3 hours and I was always the one left sitting there. So, but there's also the much deeper things, and I guess it's a case of you don't know what you don't know. But on the surface level, people across the world are looking for more natural ways of helping themselves and save the medication, save the pharmaceuticals for when you really need it. And I think that we forget the basics that we've lost with our modern lifestyles. If there were some things that we could all do to improve our health significantly and most easily, drink more water. Eat more kai with names that you recognise. You know, that are made from ingredients that you actually see an example of in nature. You know, we don't see Coke in nature. You know, let's look to our old kai. And, you know, people for years criticised us for eating our boil-ups with our watercress and our puha and our pork bone or brisket or bacon bones with all the hinu in it. The reality is that many, many of the vitamins and nutrients in our watercress and puha cannot be absorbed unless they're taken with hinu. There's a whole bunch of vitamins that unless they're taken with fat, we starve our bodies from. So we kind of, that basic kind of eating was really important to us. But if we look to the actual plants, when we know the gifts that the plants bring to the ngahere, then it's really, really easy to work out. You look at a mamaku. Where do the mamaku, the black tree fern, grow? They grow on the hillsides where the land is torn apart. So when Papatūānuku is ripped apart, the mamaku replaces those plants to soothe her. They are the very same plants that we use to soothe our gut. So, you know, after our gut's been torn apart by our modern diets, mamaku, the inside, the pith of the kuru, of the young frond stem, beautiful to eat, just slices of it, really, really nice. Or for those people that are unwell or can't take the roughage of some foods, you can just simmer that away gently and then eat that, and it's really pleasant. So that's good. I remember we had a policeman one day who had to give evidence in court, and he was a fellow student in a course I was doing, and he said, oh, Donna, have you got something? Because I've had the runs for 2 days and I really got to go sit in this courtroom. So we went, scoured Ellerslie for some kurumiko, and so we got the young shoots of that and we gave him half a dozen to eat His court case was in the afternoon and he was fine by then. Just practical things. And, you know, we shouldn't overlook simple things like, well, let's hope it's not polluted, but the froth, the plankton that we find on the tide that, you know, the mullet come in chasing. That's another form of plant medicine. It's medicine, you know, the sea plants. And if you go down there, down to an open beach, not a harbour, and scoop up that froth and you suck it up in your lips, you don't want to kind of drink it all because you get all the bits of sand and everything. Mm. But if you just suck that froth into your mouth, it's like a shot. It's amazing how much better you feel. So if you're off your game or off colour, go down and get some of this foam that comes in on the tide.
Wow.
And you just go away thinking, wow, I do feel better. I don't know if it's the sea tide, but certainly when you drink that plankton, it's amazing.
Now, you're a member of Te Kahui Rongoā Trust.
Aye.
And a part of the Te Waiwaka group. Can you tell me a little bit about those two rōpū and the power of being part of collectives like that?
Well, first and foremost, rongoā is a we medicine, not a me medicine.
Mm.
And operating collectively brings all sorts of benefits. Even if it's we're talking on the marae floor, working as a group of rongoā practitioners is way better than working as an isolated rongoā practitioner. Te Kahui Rongoā Trust was formed in 2011, maybe? Might have been 14, can't remember. And so that's a national collective. Not everybody buys into Te Kahui Rongoā because, rightfully so, rongoā is managed at iwi hapu whānau level. But in my view, there's a lot of benefit to come from uniting as whānau as well, particularly on the political front, where people are making rules that affect all of us.
Mm.
So there's a lot to be gained. I think Te Kahui Rongoā has never purported to be, and probably never will, to set the standards for rongoā Māori for the whole of Aotearoa. That's not their goal, that's not their job. The power of who and how we practice rongoā remains whānau iwi hapu, decision level. But when we see the Crown putting up legislation and policy that affects all of us, then I think these collectives have a role to play. They give all of us a voice. And so long as we stick to those things that affect all of us, then I think that's great. The minute we start prescribing how people from different rohe need to practice, then we're on dangerous ground.
Mm.
But certainly Te Kahui Rongoā has had a huge impact on the political front thus far. A lot of it, stuff that has that has happened that most whānau wouldn't even know about. The one thing that Te Kahui Rongoā unjustifiably got a whole lot of flack for was the establishing of the Rongoā Māori Standards, Tikanga A Rongoā, by the Ministry of Health. Certainly the Ministry invited Te Kahui Rongoā into the Expert Advisory Committee to help them develop some standards. The truth of the matter is that Te Kahui Rongoā didn't agree with the standards, and the Ministry of Health was unable to get consensus. I'm sorry to be political again. But the Ministry of Health were unable to get consensus, so they disbanded the committee and wrote the standards themselves and then had the cheek to thank Te Kahui Rongoā for their support.
Wow.
So things like that, Te Kahui Rongoā just definitely has to stand up for. Te Waiwaka is another movement. And there's a book available. I wish I could give you the website, but never mind.
We'll find it. We'll find it and we'll add it to the description.
Oh, kia ora. So Te Waiwaka is a movement of people who put Papatūānuku at the front of everything that we do. So it is a natural fit for Rongoā Māori practitioners.
Mm.
And so our job is to ensure that we care for Papa Tuanuku, that we intervene before we reach our tipping point of collapse, and ensuring that we use our Indigenous knowledge to the greatest advantage in order to help protect, to protect her so that we don't ruin the place for future generations.
Mm.
You know, and we're close to that tipping point now. I think the urgency cannot be overstated, and helping people to care for her. You know, one of the things that I think that we can all do is our consumerism is killing the planet, and unless it's essential, we don't have it. And that's a hard call, even for me who espouses the principles of Te Wā Waka. I look at something and I think, ooh, you know, I think I really need that new book. I think that new book will help me heaps, but at the end of the day, I might be better to go talk to the author.
Mm.
So
those shoes are going to look good on me.
Oh, I've never been a shoe person.
25 pairs at home. Yeah. I'm not a shoe person. My sister's a shoe person, though.
My husband would say that about my books, though. You know, aren't those three bookcases enough?
Now, I had asked you previous to this kōrero, what is a crazy but true fact about you? And you shared a few things, and one of them was about, you know, when someone realises that there's a rongoā practitioner in the rohe, you tend to have long lines out your door.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And I guess the thing about that is we obviously need more people like you, because if there are long lines out your door, then it's a very needed practice in communities. How do we do that? What do we do about that? Because it's not, I guess from what I see, unless you're going to make a business out of rongoā, it's not really a pathway where you can make a living from. And you know, I was reading something this morning about how, I think it was a quote or a meme or a something on social media about how this world has put so much priority on us making a living, and that actually, you know, if those that are so wealthy distributed their wealth differently, we wouldn't necessarily have to focus on making a living. Different people in our communities could be doing different things, feeding into our society that is just as important as making a living, but not so much profiting off it. And it's not so much about the kōrero we just had around whether or not we should turn rongoā into a business or not into a business, or sell pani or not, but it's how do we encourage more people to follow a rongoā pathway when the realities of today are you need a job that pays the bills.
Aye.
And this is not necessarily a job. It's a lifestyle. It's part of who we are as Indigenous people. But also, it's not necessarily going to pay the bills, but it's needed. Well, what do we do about this?
So I think you're absolutely right, and I guess that our people, Mai Rano, didn't see it as a job. It's they saw it as their gift, and while I don't profess to be gifted, you know, we all have something to contribute. And when we live in community, we're grateful for our gifts and our ability to contribute to the whānau. And that's where the real rongoā is. It's not in somebody that you dial up and go to a clinic. Look, I've had all the flash clinics you could want with, you know, other medical professionals and things like that working side by side. But I soon realised that I was paying rent for nothing, because the real rongoā happened when I was at Wānanga, when I was leaving a place and somebody would come up and go, excuse me, Whai, my kōrero's really sick. Do you think you could come up home with me before you head off? Absolutely. these people that shared all their knowledge with me didn't do, oh, I'm sorry, can you come to the next wānanga? Mm. Or I'm sorry, I'm on the next boat back to Tamaki, I can't come right now. They didn't help me to learn these things so I could do those things. So it's about sharing your gifts. You know how Māori come together at tangi? And it doesn't matter what you've got, what you haven't got, what you can and what you can't do. You just do what you can. And for me, rongoā is exactly the same. It's not a profession. It's something that you can do.
Mm.
And you can do a tiny bit. And next time you can do a tiny bit more. And before you know it, you're doing a whole lot. And before you know it, if you're really lucky, someone will take the tea towel off you and say, no, you go do the rongoā. So, yeah, since I gave up my career, to be honest, I've never wanted for anything. I've not had a regular salary for years now. And my husband gave up work, his career of 35 years. He gave that up about 10 years ago. And to be honest, we've never been richer. Granted, we own our own home. But that said, we're not on the pension. We're not old enough to be on the pension. We have no regular income from anywhere. And we've never been richer.
Mm.
Because when you go to these communities like the Chatham Islands, those communities look after you. They really do. And the example that I gave you, I can remember we went there deliberately because one of the whānau rang and said, you know, one of our aunties is not well. If you're up this way, can you call in and see her? Good excuse to go fishing. We headed north. So we got up there and, you know, our people, they can be unwell, but despite their disease, they give off their own rongoā. Oh, yes, dear, I'll be back later. You know, one of the whānau have died at the marae down the road. We need to go and pay our respects. So off they go. And I can remember vividly my husband saying, when are we heading back? I said, oh, after lunch. When they get back, we'll head back. Okay, he says. Then we see the auntie coming up the driveway back from the marae. It's a 2-kilometre-long driveway out in the sticks. Can see her coming up, and then he goes, there's quite a few cars coming after her. Maybe the tangi's moving here. She arrives, but she's been to the tangi and she's told everybody there's a healer in town. So now there's this big queue of people and my tāne just looks at me and he goes, guess we're not going home today, huh? But the real beauty of it is just how we are when we're together. It's not even the rongoā person. So go into the room, working away with auntie, and then everybody's queuing up outside and I can hear the other aunties playing cards, laughing, accusing each other of cheating. Then one yells out, goes, wait, look at all those grapefruit on the ground. You kids, get outside, pick up all that grapefruit. Don't let it go to waste. Next minute, they've got all the ones my age making marmalade while the older ones are playing cards, accusing each other of cheating. And then I can hear through the wall somebody saying, oi, you've been on that table long enough. Get off, let someone else have a turn. All of that is rongoā.
Mm.
Everybody went home feeling richer and with a jar of marmalade. And I just was so grateful to be part of that community.
Mm.
So it was rongoā all round. It's not like going to a doctor where, you know, you get your punny and you go home. It's about being with whānau. It's about having a laugh.
Waiting room quietly. Yeah.
Oh, in the Chathams, they don't have appointments. So you all come and sit down and I'll come out and I'll go, who was next? Somebody will put their hand up. I go, and who's the oldest? You just been Trump, buddy. And next minute the karawa will go, oh, no, you go. You've got to go to work. I'm all right. Deal them up. And they'll be playing their cards or doing whatever, or somebody will be in the kitchen cooking a kai. For me, that's where the real rongoā is, not what's happening in the whare. Yeah. You know, not here's a wai for your cough or here's a pani for your leg. It's being around the community.
Mm. Who is an Indigenous woman that inspires you or that has inspired you on your journey?
I remember about 5, maybe 10 years ago, time flies, being in the shower one day and thinking to myself, if I had to pick 5 people that have influenced my life most, out of the blue came my Form 2 school teacher.
Mm.
Her name was Mrs. Kingy, Barbara Kingy, and I was a whore at school. I was really naughty. And she was the headmistress, she was the headmistress, and she was very strict and she always had the top class. And while I was quite bright, I was still naughty, and I was in her class and I play up merry hell. And one day she sent me out to the cloakroom, and, you know, I was kind of at that age where, whatever. Off to the cloakroom I went, stood in there. After she'd settled the class down, she came out and she had a right go at me. And it was all about me. And I can still remember, you know, she was only about 4 foot tall and I was already getting close to 6 foot.
Mm.
I remember her looking up at me going, you have so many brains, young lady. You could use them for really good things. And I am so disappointed that you are choosing not to. I was gobsmacked. And I think that was a real turning point for me, that she wasn't going nuts at me for disrupting her class or making her job hard. She was concerned that I was going to be a waste.
Mm.
And I think that really hit home. So anyway, this day in the shower, I thought, I wonder if she's still alive. So when I got out the shower, I went onto the white pages, I had a look. Still the name Kingy in the same address in Fielding. So I rang her up and this lady answered the phone and I said, oh, is Mrs. Barbara Kingy? There she goes speaking. And I said to her, you might not remember me, but my name was Donna Wilson. Oh, Donna, I remember you. And so we had great time reminiscing and I got the opportunity to tell her just what a difference that she had made to my life.
Mm.
And I was really grateful that I did so because the week before COVID she passed.
Wow.
And I couldn't get down to her tangi, which was really important to me, but I was really grateful that I'd taken the time to ring her before she passed to let her know. So, and she remembered every aspect of my 1 year amongst those thousands of tauira that she had over the years. And, I was really grateful that I had taken the time to let her know before she passed what a difference she made to my life and therefore she must have to many others.
Mm.
So, yeah, she, without even realising, I don't think our school teachers fully appreciate the impact they can have on the life of a child. So I was very grateful.
Mm. So my last question for you is, what is your hope for the future of Indigenous women?
Wow, that's a good one. I think to be able to stand confidently in our own mana, whatever we choose that to be for ourselves, to be proud of who we are and of what how we choose to use the gifts that we were given, no matter how small, no matter how big. And to do it with pride.
Mm. Kia ora. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. I've loved listening to your kōrero and I'm really glad that we're about to go out into the bush because I'm going to ask you about all these different plants that I want, that I want to know about. But tēnā koe, Donna. Thank you so much for your kōrero.
Kia ora. And thank you for the opportunity. Anything that helps inspire other people to learn more about the knowledge that's been left to us, whether it's rongoā or anything else. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. I hope to inspire others to look, whether they're Māori or not, to look back to their tūpuna and try and honour the gifts that they've left us and that they've instilled in us. So kia ora, ngā mihi.